first question was, what if you don't dream? Well, we know you do dream. What's I have to do to get you to sit down? We know you dream several times a night, I think five-ish. And just keep a pad and paper by your bed. If you have a dream, one dream in a week, and it's all something like, I'm in New York, write that down. And the next night you'll have a dream, I was in New York with Tom, write that down. You're training synapses. And I've never seen anyone not dream, but you have to be disciplined. Don't jump right out of bed. Keep a pad by your bed. Write down anything, even if it's silly. And you'll see they get longer. Yes?
How does this work with, like, insomnia, if you're all waking up? Would that be...
I don't know, really. I don't know. I don't think it would make a difference, but I couldn't say. The other question was, is all you do is dream work? No. It's just the easiest way in. I think what we are trying to do is get at that part of the personality which is still spontaneous. And the dream is one of those places. But I've had people write poetry, write songs, sing songs, dance, draw, any place where you are emoting without controlling it with your mind. And you would interpret them all the same way. It would not make a difference. Was there another question? Yeah. And yeah, daydreams, same. No difference.
I have a question about comic to make about the synchronicity that you were saying that dreams, but it seems like that happens with other things as well. For example, or a situation happens where you're drawn to something, not in a dream particularly, but in something that's calling you ourselves.
Right.
And then things begin to appear outside
right.
That say, yes, I am supposed to do
right.
This.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be just a dream. Right?
Yeah, no. And we will, I don't want to get into that too much just for the sake of time now.
Okay.
But, you know, as we were saying, we're going to do two in the winter, two next fall, and then two next winter from winter of 08, going through each of Jung's major works. It's going to be free to members of Friends of Jung. It's sort of a attempt to get people interested in becoming members, and we will spend a whole day on this issue of synchronicity and the apparent psychological function of the material world. But let's just stick with the basics for the moment.
I understand the question.
Yeah, it's very, and this is one of Jung's late discoveries. I mean, I think the big discovery up until 1928 was the self that we'll be talking about. The second, starting in 1944, to the end of his life, he worked on this synchronicity issue because it really blows apart everything. But let's just worry about the basics for this for the time being. Well, now we're going to move on to different parts of the personality. Everything that we'll be going to from here builds on what we just talked about, and it may sound complicated, but it really isn't if you think through. Something I just mentioned, that what you dream of largely are parts of your own personality symbolized in dream images. As I said, there are some exceptions. Sometimes you can actually be dreaming of the person you're dreaming of. That's a special case, really not 100 level questioning. But if you go back to the basic idea that what you dream of in dream images are parts of your personality symbolized in that image. Now, the next step just takes that idea one leap further. If you look at dreams over a period of time, either your own dreams over a year or so, or other people's dreams, if you sit where I do, you will see typical dream images appearing in people's dreams. That must mean that there are typical parts of the personality. So what we're going to be doing now is looking at typical parts of the personality, so defined because Jung observed there are particular dream images that appear repeatedly, therefore there must be typical parts of the personality. One dream image that appears repeatedly and frequently is an image of somebody of your own sex that you don't like. Another very typical dream image is somebody of your opposite sex that you're attracted to. Another dream image that appears quite frequently is of performers or people who are very outwardly oriented. Another dream image that appears very frequently, maybe not at the beginning, so if you haven't had these in dreams, it's not surprising. These can occur at the beginning of inner exploration, but more often than not, they occur later, is images of symmetry. Circles, squares, tables, diamonds, and I put these two together, images of symmetry and images of figures bigger than life. A hero, a big sports figure, a god, a goddess. So Jung simply observed people's dreams, and not say this is all you're dreaming of, but very typical dream images of a strong emotional power are dream images of the of your own sex that you don't like, dream images of the opposite sex where there's an erotic attraction, images of performers, and images of symmetry and or bigger than life. So these are the four main constituents of the personality that we're going to be looking at now for the rest of the day. The first is called the shadow. The shadow would be that part of you symbolized by dream images of your opposite, of your same sex that you don't like. The anima and animus would be the name Jung gave to that part of the personality, symbolized by dream images of the opposite sex where there is an attraction. The anima would be the name Jung gave to the dreams of men, of women. And the animus, that part of the woman's personality, symbolized by men in her dreams that she's attracted to. We're going to go through each of these in turn. I'm just giving you the lay of the land, so don't worry about if it doesn't make sense yet. The performers would represent your mask. It's what Jung calls the persona. And the last figure would represent what Jung calls the self, which I alluded to earlier, that image of your true individuality, but it's much more complicated than that. Just said that to give you a quick overview. We're now going to go to the shadow, and we're going to look at that in some detail. So the first typical part of the personality, symbolized by dream images of your same sex that you don't like, Jung called the shadow. Now, if we had more time, what I generally do is quite interesting, but I'm not going to do it, keep the thing flowing. I ask people in the group anonymously, and this is a big enough group to do it, so it would be a little awkward for the men, but where there's a more balanced and larger group, I ask them, and you might just do this for a moment, think of somebody of your own sex you don't really like. And what is it about them you don't like? This, you don't have to say it out loud, just think to yourself. And I ask people to write that down. And I collect the cards and I put up here what they say. So what I'm going to do now is simply give to you what I've heard over the years. It would be a little bit more fun if we could actually do it. It would take an hour just to do that. So what people generally say is they're aggressive. They're dishonest.
Both men and women are saying that?
Well, there is some difference. I was going to try not to get into it with men and women. It's kind of the same. Now, where we get to the anima and animus, it's going to be quite different. Yes, I think men might say more aggressive. A woman might say more catty. A guy might say dishonest. A woman might say more manipulative. But realizing there's a great deal of flexibility in those distinctions. But these are the two biggest that occur again and again and again and again. They might say intellectual. Or mean. Unreliable. And so on. So the Jung's point here is to give us a kind of a shorthand for identifying what are the emotionally charged parts of our personality. And what are they likely, and that's the big word I want to stress. What are those dream images likely to symbolize when you dream of them? This is just to give us the top of the bell curve. When we see that figure in a dream, you can think that more times than not the individual is going to describe it in this way. But it would be a great mistake to take what I've just said and define the image by these terms. This is the average, which we do just to kind of orient ourselves, what is the nature of the human being we're dealing with, knowing that anybody and everybody may very well define this dream figure or this part, this person that they don't like differently. But this is on the average. So on the average, the shadow, when Jung talks about the shadow in his writings, would represent these qualities in human nature. Again, please remember, we never take the theory and put it on the image. We start with the image, hear what the person says, but you will not be surprised to learn that very often this is what they say. I played a little trick on you. I said, imagine somebody on the outside. And now I've made a leap to say, this is part of you on the inside. The nature of our relationship to this is generally by way of projection. What we don't know of in ourselves, what of the shadow we don't know in ourselves, we resent outside in other people. So the way we maintain our unknowing of any of these figures that we'll be talking about is we see on the outside what is on the inside that we don't know about. So if you want to find out what somebody's shadow is like, you just have to hear them talk about the kind of people they don't like. Now, this is kind of tricky, and this is more of a fine point, but it's a question that often comes up, so I'm going to mention it. Let's take Adolf Hitler. Now, nobody here is going to like Adolf Hitler. And people will say, but he is really an evil person. If I don't like Adolf Hitler, or if I do like somebody else, it is not a statement about what I do or don't know about myself. He may be that way, and so may I. So it's not just when I say, oh, you're projecting it, that you don't have that in you, and that it's merely a thing on the outside. It's also something that can be on the inside. Does that make sense? No. Yes?
Isn't the key that the emotion, that there's an affective charge to it? I mean, there's, you know, Hitler, I don't think about Hitler. He wouldn't be somebody I would like necessarily to know.
Yeah.
But is there more the idea that when you have the sense of the other person that there's some sort of an emotional charge that's with it, that comes along with it, that really indicates that it's a shadow projection?
Yes. Oh, that's true. What I want to mention is that person may really be that way.
Right.
And you may need to stay away from them.
Right.
It's not to say you should like them or get along with them, but that you too are that way. That's where it gets confusing. If you say it's a projection, then some people will think that means that that person isn't that way.
Oh,
and they can very well be that way, but you better watch out. Yeah, Bob.
Gary, I have a question. Can it be sometimes you just don't like somebody? Without any, you know, it has nothing to do with projection or shadow.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe we could explore this. Where, how would you see the difference?
I'm kind of with Nancy, where if you're experiencing another person, and it kind of pushes a button in you, and it triggers you emotionally, that you might want to look at a little differently. because that it's related. There could be some relatedness there. That could be some shadow things. Where on the other, if you just don't like someone, but not for any particular reason, you just don't like them.
Let me try it this way. What I'm trying to get clear is the distinction between the projection and reality. The person may really be aggressive and dishonest, and you may not want to like them. And we're not saying you should, although generally the work does move in that direction. But where you will see it is your judgment in dealing with them is clouded. That is the key factor.
Okay. That's when you can stop and say...
There's a projection going on here.
And your ability to judge.
And you will, yeah, where there's a projection going on, even though the person may be this way, where there's a projection going on, you will not be dealing with them in a very smart way. You'll either be adding fuel to the fire, or you'll be tripping yourself up, or you'll be sabotaging yourself.
Could you add another one? Spending a lot of time thinking about it.
Right.
You might be handling it okay, but it's just...
Right.
There all
where I see it, and it's, you know, I mean, believe me, I've done this myself. I don't sit in judgment here. But when you will hear somebody complaining about, let's say, a boss at work or a marriage, but with a marriage it's a little different, and that individual changes for the better, and the complaints are resolved, what do you think happens? The person that's complaining starts acting in the way they complain about the other to somebody else, often to me, the therapist. That's where you see it's a projection. It's a complicated issue. I hope I haven't made it too complicated. For this beginning level, but the basic idea is you got something inside you and you see it outside, and then the question generally comes up, suppose the person is that way, is it always a projection? No, but where you can see it's a projection is when your judgment is clouded, and when, if that situation gets resolved, you'll start treating other people the way you complain they treated you. They're the two ways. In other words, I'm not saying you should go around loving Hitlers. See what I'm saying? There is an objective evil, but you might also ask, do I have a Hitler in me? Yeah.
If somebody, say a girl is making bad choices and then she ends up being involved with and keeps picking the same kind of men, but yet complaining that it's their fault, is that a projection?
Yes. That's anima and animus. We will get there. Definitely we'll get there. But it's a little different. See, this is a projection onto your own sex. So it's women's conflict with women, men's conflict with men.
Projections are onto your own sex.
If it's a shadow.
If it's a shadow.
Right. Shadow is your own sex. These qualities. Yes, yes.
The other side of it is that when there's no projection or the projection collapses, you find the other person totally uninterested. It's like, that happens to me a couple of times. It's like suddenly it's like, well,
what was I so fired up about?
Yeah, or you're just zero. You know, it's like not that there's there's no negative or positive anything. Mm-hmm. There's no magnetism in any way.
Okay. Well, basic idea, just to get you to know what Jung means by shadow. It's this part of you, generally, that conclusion reached by top of the bell curve data. And it's generally symbolized by a dream figure of your same sex you don't like, and that it operates through projection where you are in a negative emotional relationship with somebody. Deciding is that projection or is that reality is another complicated issue, but this is, I'll be happy if you just get this straight for the moment and how that works. Why does Jung make this distinction between these different parts? We're going to get to the anima and animus in a minute. Because he feels the process of becoming conscious is different for each piece. This is what it really comes down to in therapy. Now, this shadow is what he calls the personal unconscious. meaning you can pretty much apply Freud's psychology here at this point. These qualities of yourself can be traced back to your childhood, to where you were taught not to be this way. Or you were that way and you were punished, so you continued being that way, but you separated your awareness out from it. So in trying to investigate the nature of the shadow, we will go back to the past and find out where in your life it was formed. And the other thing is, Jung feels this one is solvable. You can integrate these qualities because they were once conscious, but you learn to disown them. So it's simply a matter of going back and recovering what you once were. Whereas, see, with the anima and animus, it's much different. And what we're trying to do then is go back to the shadow and begin to take responsibility for all the places in life we act this way, and to stop denying it, to admit it, and then to try to change it. It's very much a matter of Freudian willpower and recognition and decision. You know, if you have an aggressive shadow, chances are you might be a little too passive. So that you are aggressive from time to time, but you don't realize it. Most of the time you're going to be passive, but now and then in a traffic jam or in an argument, you'll become overly aggressive. So what we try to do then is go back to those qualities in their negative state and turn them into assets. So aggressivity can become strength. Dishonesty maybe can become shrewdness. Intellectual can be a genuine search. Meanness might be toughness. Unreliability might be flexibility. But generally the big thing is, this is where you start meeting denial. Oh, I'm not aggressive. Oh, I'm not intellectual. And what you don't realize is they're really friends in disguise. But when they came up in your childhood, they were negatively labeled, so you stuffed them away. And it's not that they don't exist, it's that they exist outside your awareness. You are these things, but you don't admit it. Much of evil is here, although I think he will really be looking at evil when we get to the very last seminar on self, the very last series. Because I think evil finally is the dark side of God, but let's not go there yet. But yes, I mean, you just think how, if you've ever lived in a foreign culture, the French are, the Americans are, the Germans are, that's all collective shadow. Recognize it, cease to project it, deal with it, deal with the dilemmas involved with it realistically and not emotionally and hysterically. Another thing is, if it's a shadow projection, you often try to improve yourself by making the other person better. So self-righteousness is a real litmus test of shadow, unresolved shadow issues. Fundamentalism is classic here. Always trying to convert somebody else. That's the shadow. Let's look at some shadow dreams. It's on page 2 of your guide. I've given us 2 male and 2 female. I'm in the front seat with Dave. My family is in the back seat of the car. We are on an interstate highway. we take a turn and descend into a really shabby ghetto area. Three young black youths see us. Two of them, upon seeing us, get guns. I am frightened. We are sitting at a stop sign. I tell Dave to floor it and run over them. I awake him before anything happens. See, the use would be the shadow. And whatever the dreamer would associate to them would be the qualities in himself that he needs to recognize and come to terms with. Dave, in a way, you could call a shadow figure, too. Dave is the part of him that doesn't want him to see who he really is in this shadow area.
And there's the fact that the family in the back seat was the back seat for this fact that it came from his childhood.
Well, actually, it's his wife and children.
Oh, that seems to call to mind that he's struggling with, that he recognizes his position of things that happen to the family or protecting them, and he's not dealing with issues and how he is carrying out that.
Absolutely, yeah. The family was suffering. I don't think I brought this along. This, I said, is a short person, but in the other, I have a dream of his that he goes to a gas station, and his company car is a diesel, and his family car is a gasoline car, and he's putting diesel fuel in his family car, and he realizes it's a mistake. So he was treating the family the same way he treats his business, with the same cold-heartedness and ruthlessness, very well, very possibly what these ghetto youths may symbolize. In the same dream, some months later, same guy. It is as if I am watching a documentary film about the Nazi camps. See, that would be his inner Nazi. Power, control, and hostility towards individual expression. The camera shows a barracks, and it is efficiently modeled after a rail car. Then my view is from the water. I see great waves rolling toward the barracks building. Then I am in the building. The Nazi is being held by an American. It is his turn for revenge. He takes a swipe at the Nazi's neck with a razor. I am afraid the man's head will come off. Instead, the Nazi reaches up and pulls his own skin completely from his head. What do you make of that? It's that skin bit now would be what I would not call a personal image, but a mythological image. One of the images that the dreams use for transformation, one of the oldest, is the snake shedding its skin. So I think that's involved with that rather gruesome pulling the skin off. It's showing the Nazi in him is transforming if he can take his knife of discrimination and begin to recognize it. And in fact, he did. He did, yes, he did. I was sitting in a car with a female. I was sitting in a car with a pleasure-loving and irresponsible female friend. I did not know who was driving the car, but I found myself being pursued by a truck driver, driven by a murderer who was determined to run us down. The only way I could save myself was to push the driver of my car aside and take the wheel into my own hands, then I would be able to escape. See, the pleasure-loving and irresponsible friend is the shadow. And that is what is running her life. And if she does that, she's in mortal danger. And what she needs to do is get control of her life and stop those tendencies from running her life. Shadow work is really about becoming more moral. I was in a room where mirrors are brightly lit so that I can see to put on my makeup. I reach into my makeup kit and put my hands on the foundation, which is always applied first. As I open the lid of the foundation, I discover that it is black in color, and if I apply it to my face, I will be black. This does not seem unusual, however. What do you make of that? It shows integration, but how?
When she's beginning to accept the blackness within right. her as part of herself.
Right. The foundation of any further work in our understanding of things is the ability to recognize what your shadow is and accept it. Otherwise, you see, any future challenges that come up are going to be dealt with this way. And you can't get further in life if you're dealing with your inner issues dishonestly or in a bullying fashion or whatever. So this is really the shadow work is the foundation for the further stages in Jungian work. And it's not one, two, three. But I think if you look at series of dreams over time, you'll see that the very first phase of the work, you are dealing more with this sort of stuff. Facing up where you're schlemiel, where you're goofing up, where you're not honest, where you're hurting other people, and taking responsibility for it. And then trying to find the positive place in life for all these qualities that have been operating in a negative way. And that is the foundation that she's putting on her face. And it takes humility. It is no fun looking at the stuff. Questions? That's the shadow. We'll go on to the anima and animus. We'll just get started and we'll have a lunch break. This is a complicated one, and I think it's changed a bit since Jung wrote about it. The next main part of the personality, shadow being the first, anima and animus being the second, has to do with your relationship to the opposite sex and to what Jung calls the contrasexual tendencies in the unconscious. Contrasexual tendencies. Where the shadow were represented the same sex tendencies that you have repressed. The anima or the animus represents the contrasexual tendencies. Now, I'm going to explain that. But first let me say, there are two definitions for the anima and animus. This is the first, we'll get to the second this afternoon. I would ask people the very same question I asked about the shadow, to understand what, when you're dreaming of this man, if you're a woman, or if you're a man and you're dreaming of the woman, what part of your personality do they symbolize? I would do it the same way I did with the shadow and ask people, women, think of all the men you've loved. It can be like your dad, it can be your brother, it can be a lover. When I say love, I don't mean sexual love, but including. And I would say to men, think of all the women you have loved. And write out the qualities. Now, I'm going to do this carefully. Let's start with what the women say.
Does Jim have any comments about people who were divergently sexual, homosexual, bisexual?
I don't think it makes any difference. The only thing that's different is how Eros works. Now, I see gay guys and lesbian women, it fits. You'd be surprised, but it fits.
You still use the opposite sex, not the sex they're attracted to.
Yeah, but when we get done with this, you two bring me back to your question, how does it work with homosexuals? It works differently, but I think the setup's the same. I'm not sure about this, but that's where I am at the moment. So let's just get the basic definitions and then we can pursue that, particularly when we get to the second definition, how that all works. So I say to women, think of men. Now, Jung has a list of qualities. Again, thinking top of bell curve, which he has said the animus represents, and a list of qualities that the anima represents. I think that's changing. So what I do is I make two columns, and I write down the qualities that the women say the men have that are classically what Jung said, and then I write down the qualities where it seems to be changing. And what women will say about the men they're attracted to that are typically what Jung says the animus symbolizes are strong, handsome, smart, active, goal-driven, giving a very short list. So classically, if you read Jung, when he's talking about the animus of a woman, the inner man, that animus would personify these qualities in the woman: her strength, her sense of a place in the world as being okay, that her intelligence, her activity, and her ability to reach a goal. What women say, which is different from what Jung classically said, is things like he's soft, he's gentle, he's caring, he's nurturing, so I would say today that the animus is changing. This still applies, but it's moving in this direction. Remember, the feminists really fell on Jung for this, and I think it's been totally misunderstood. Like he's saying this is the way it should be, he's simply saying this is the way it is. In his day, when he listened to what women said about these men, this is what they were saying. So that's why he reached this conclusion. This is what those men personified. But if he were alive today and he heard other comments, I think he would have broadened the definition. Because what he's doing is simply listening to what people say about these figures and then applying that to the dream figures, always realizing he's talking about the top of the bell curve. And if you don't fit here, fine. He's just trying to give himself some average to orient himself in dealing with people.
Was there a spiritual aspect in the one?
Yes. Yeah. That's. There are others, I guess. Can you think of any others? Creative. The question is, which came first? Did this start to shift inwardly and there was an external shift in society? Or was there a political change that affected the inside? I would say the former, but I don't know.
I think in this day, provider would be there as well.
Yeah, money. Ambition. Accomplish. Remember, again, we've gone to this by way of projection, where the shadow was based on a belittling projection. I don't like this person. This is based on an idealizing projection. I admire this person because. In other words, where the person in the shadow kept awareness of those qualities away from them by belittling. Here, the person keeps their awareness of these qualities away from them by admiring. Oh, you're smart. I don't have to be. Oh, you are accomplished. I don't have to be. And obviously, the goal of our work is to help the individual bring these qualities into consciousness. So by idealizing the other sex, or admiring the other sex, you forfeit your own relationship to your strengths. Again, it's not that you don't have these qualities, it's that you have them and you have not developed them, if you're a woman. And for the man, it's the same, except it's reverse. You can flip. What the man will say here is much more emphasizing. And it, other thing I should mention, if I would, when I did this, if I tally up the number of response, the weight would be way on this side. No matter what the woman says about her political feelings about sexual roles, this is the way her eros is working, and that's what Jung is interested in. It would be way weighted here, although you would see a movement over here. And for the man, it would be way weighted here, nourishing, gentle, kind, soft, well-related, good friends. The whole relationship and nourishing stuff comes up. And where it's changing then is the men would begin saying, she's a good career, intellectually challenging partner, and so on. So the first definition of the anima and animus is it's a personification of the contra-sexual tendencies in the unconscious. But things get much more complicated. And we'll save that for after lunch.